2025 Urban Farm is kind of a combination of small-scale sustainable agriculture farm and community development. It kind of came about because while we were doing the block-by-block program, we noticed that there were blocks that weren't being reinvested in, and we were kind of looking for a method to drive some reinvestment into those areas, especially areas that were within the floodplain designations that didn't allow for standard reconstruction of housing. And so we've been doing some research over the years about urban farming and other avenues and ideas, and came upon a group in Milwaukee called Growing Power that was run by an ex-NBA player who recently just won a MacArthur Award, I believe, for greatness in the nonprofit world. But figured out that he was kind of using urban farms as a way to drive out poverty and obesity and hunger and food security issues. And so kind of combining an urban farm with community development and flood recovery and a lot of Matthew 25's goals of feeding the hungry kind of made perfect sense. And so we identified a four-block area where there was a lot of housing that was missing that we couldn't rebuild because it was all in the 100-year floodplain. And in the area, in that four-block area that was in the 500-year floodplain, there was a lot of places where housing needs to be built. So we were kind of able to combine the farm on one side of the lot or the area with the ability to build houses on the other side of the area. So kind of taking both parts of Matthew 25 and putting them both into the same area. And by focusing on one specific area, we can bring attention to this area that needs some investment. And actually, you know, it's only been the first year of the farm being there, but we've already noticed that neighbors are fixing their houses up and reinvesting. And you know, we've had a house that we've sold in the neighborhood because somebody wanted to be close to the farm. And so it kind of appears that it's already starting to work as we had hoped it would. So that's really, really, you know, great for the neighborhood as a whole. And potentially there could be other places where vacant land can be turned into, you know, an urban farm and then be used to drive reinvestment around the edges. So, you know, that's kind of the model of what we kind of thought we would do. The location of the farm in Cedar Rapids is in the 400 block of G Avenue Northwest. For people who know the area, it's kind of at the corner of F Avenue Northwest and Ellis Boulevard. Okay. And, you know, eventually we want to get to the point where we can offer some after-school job training and help some kids in the neighborhood kind of get skills that are a little bit greater than what they would get at a gas station or a fast food place. You know, teach them marketing and business management and kind of give them a skill so that maybe in the future they'd be able to go out and, if this is a career path that they like, they could go out and start growing their own food or kind of starting their own business. You know, the farm is about 2.5 acres in size. And we, this year we have 31 shareholders who buy the produce from us each week. And so you don't need a lot of space to kind of have a decent sized business. So that's one of the things I want to get across to the future trainees is that you don't have to go buy 100 acres to have a farm. You can have a farm that's 2 or 3 acres, and if you sell the right produce, you can make a decent living at it. So that's kind of where we'll get to eventually. Right now, we're just getting the farm up and running and operating. And, you know, we are a little different than most in that we sell about half of our produce for half price to neighbors who are income challenged. That's not something that most CSAs, which is community-supported agriculture, most CSA farms wouldn't do that kind of thing, but we obviously have a slightly different mission than most. But as far as what we grow crop-wise, you know, we grow a lot of pretty much all the standard vegetables that you would see at your farmer's market. You know, we do have a little bit of a space restriction, so we don't grow sweet corn or dried beans. And there's really no shortage of sweet corn in Iowa anyway, so I don't think anybody notices that. We did get permission from Salem United Methodist Church to use a little bit of extra land that they have in town, so we're able to grow some winter squash on their land, which frees up some of our farm space for other crops, which are which is great because sometimes that winter squash can take up a lot of room. But, of course, this year's been a bit of a challenge with the drought being our first year, and we couldn't have picked probably a more difficult year, but we had a lot of good summer help as far as volunteers from other places around the country who came to town. And then, of course, we had two summer staffers and one year-long VISTA who worked all summer long to keep everything up. And, you know, these are typically college students who are on summer break or just graduated who are interested in urban farming or food security issues and want to learn about what we're doing and how they can kind of tackle some of these issues as they kind of mature in their careers. So it's been a great partnership with them so far.
You're looking towards developing more of a after-school training experience. What kind of age levels are you looking at, and how many young people are you looking to expand to in the years to come?
Part of what we're doing along those lines is starting to set up school gardens. So we're starting to put in gardening clubs with local schools and trying to integrate some learning with a farm and gardens with the school curriculum. And so some of that will kind of bleed into eventually have some part-time evening staff that would be kids from the schools. The summer is obviously pretty heavy with the need for work, but you know, with the fall, just not quite sure yet. As we move forward, we're looking to keep expanding our school gardens so that, you know, right now we have three different gardening programs at three different schools or three different neighborhoods, and so we'd like to keep expanding that as we go forward and giving, you know, kids a place to go in the evenings and kind of learn about farming and gardening and food choices and, you know, all those different issues that we try to make fun for them but help them teach them at the same time. And, you know, that's another focus of the farm. So the farm, of course, is a big single place, but then also there's these little outreach programs within that we kind of reach out into other places to work on, you know. You know, the cool thing about our farm in particular, at least to me, is that, you know, it's about 2.5 acres, but we were able to pretty much prep the ground and work it this year with zero machinery. We know we just used all human labor, a lot of mission trip youth and other volunteers who came to town who were able to spend time out there working. And, you know, we do primarily a method called sheet mulching, which is cardboard or rosin paper on the ground to kill the grass and weeds. And then we get compost from the city for free. And so we kind of build up the soil with the compost on top of the rosin paper or the cardboard, and then plant right into the compost. And then over time, that cardboard will decompose. It allows us to avoid some of that disturbing the soil issues that you get with tilling. A lot of the soil that the city put back in there after they tore down houses was pretty bad soil anyway, so adding a lot of compost is great. You know, the other thing that we do is actually dig the soil out about a foot deep and take out all the clay that was put in there and replace it all with compost. So in some of those places where we've had volunteer teams do that, we've got a lot of fertility. It's obviously pretty laborious to do that, but it obviously gives us a much greater result on the produce that we're able to grow. So it's a great place for people to come who have a desire to do some physical labor, because, like I said, we don't really use machinery at all. At some point in the future, perhaps we'll get some animals.
How has this been for you?
It's been good for me. You know, this has been a passion of mine for quite a few years, and so I'm glad to be able to move forward with it and push it and get into it. I won't say that it's been that easy. You know, it's obviously been a challenge and taken a lot more work than I expected, but it's tough to say that it's work when you're doing what you love to do. So, although don't tell Clint that, but you know, it's just one of those things that feels like I'm called to do it. And so we just do it and we get it done. And it feels great to be teaching new people who are interested in this. And it feels great to be teaching volunteers. And, you know, everybody who comes here is able to learn something new that they didn't know. And so that's really great. You know, I've had a lot of you know, people that are approaching retirement come and work on the farm and kind of gives them a different way to interact with some of the younger generation, you know, because a lot of our staff or summer staff would be in the 20 to 25 range, you know, age range. And so it gives them a little bit different way to connect that maybe they've had some difficulty in the past doing. But, you know, we've had some volunteers who've come to town and said that they had not really connected with that age group before, but now after being with our workers at the farm, they feel like they kind of have a better idea of how they, that age group kind of thinks, and how to approach them a little bit better to connect with them. So I think it's great to get that intergenerational working and volunteering going between people.
Sounds like this has been a huge win-win all the way around with the intergenerational that you just spoke of, with the farming, and so the half price produce for people who might be economically challenged, and then the feeling better about my neighborhood and either choosing to buy a house and be there or fixing up where I've been. All the way around, that sounds like huge positives for Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, no, it's been unbelievable the way the neighbors have reacted. You know, we've got a neighbor, the same neighbor who has foiled a break-in attempt at our, when we had our equipment stored on site at like 1 a.m, and he mows all the grass and everything around the lots. And, you know, another neighbor grew a bunch of tomatoes and pepper plants for us to put out at the farm so that we'd have some, you know, to grow to give to the customers. So, you know, it's really been pretty successful as far as getting the neighbors kind of enthusiastic about their neighborhood and taking pride in their area. And, you know, I think that's one reason it could be such a great tool to drive community development in the future. And so we just need to get this one settled in, and then, I mean, I'll start looking for another place we can go to where we can do the same thing, you know. I've really been a little surprised, frankly, about how well that has worked. And part of that, I think, is our approach to developing, you know, relationships with neighbors and people in the community. So obviously a strength of ours, and so we just need to kind of build off of that.